Mitt Romney has won the Illinois Republican presidential primary, besting rival Rick Santorum in the big state contest. This is Decision 2012, Illinois Public Media's live coverage of the 2012 primary election. I'm Craig Cohen. Tonight, we're bringing you the latest results and analysis in the GOP presidential primary, of course, the Democratic and Republican 13th congressional district primaries, plus other races for state legislative and judicial seats. This hour, we'll also explore the Champaign County Board, Auditor, and Circuit Clerk races in depth. We'll talk with Tom Kasich, editorial page editor of the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette. We'll also learn about a subject of a referendum on today's ballot, electric aggregation. And of course, we'll share more results as they come in. First, this news update from National Public Radio.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. Based on early returns and exit polls, the Associated Press has declared Mitt Romney the winner in the Illinois primary. With 19% of the vote in, results show Romney leading his rival Rick Santorum 54% to 28%. NPR's David Shapers outside Chicago.
Though Illinois Republicans have been increasingly voting for more conservative candidates in recent primary elections, Romney's strength appears to be among moderate voters in the suburban areas around Chicago. Some voters tout his business experience, while others call him a strong fiscal conservative, but not too conservative on social issues. And here's 35-year-old teacher Scott Thiessen of suburban Elmhurst.
It's not so much what Romney has to offer, it's what the other candidates do not offer. It's why I'm choosing Romney.
In other words, electability. Thiessen says Romney is the Republican Party's best hope for beating President Obama in the fall. David Shaper, NPR News, Chicago.
54 delegates are up for grabs in Illinois. House Republicans have unveiled an aggressive deficit reduction plan, though in order to carry that out, it would require that spending be slashed, including programs for the poor. The plan released by the House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan, along with cutting Medicaid, would slash food stamps, Pell Grants, and a variety of other programs, which the Obama administration has vowed to protect. The White House charged the GOP plan, which has no chance of passage this year, continues to dole out tax cuts to the rich while protecting tax breaks for big companies. A strong earthquake measuring 7.4 rattled Mexico today. NPR's Jason Beaubien reports damage from the quake appears to be limited, though.
In downtown Mexico City, office workers poured out of high-rise buildings. Church bells clanged as they rattled in their steeples, and emergency vehicles raced through the streets. The epicenter of the quake was just east of Acapulco in the state of Guerrero. However, it shook much of southern and central Mexico. The governor of Guerrero says there are no reports of human casualties, but he says hundreds of buildings were damaged. The shaking also caused at least one pedestrian bridge in the capital to collapse. President Felipe Calderon says there was no major damage from the powerful quake. He says government buildings suffered some broken windows, but hospitals, airports, and other vital infrastructure are operating normally. Jason Beaubien, NPR News, Mexico City.
A departure for the Federal Reserve Board chairman, at least when it comes to his current routine. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke addressed a group of George Washington University undergraduates today in the first of 4 one-hour lectures he plans to deliver. Today's lecture, which was also carried out on the Fed's website, focused on the financial panics of the 19th century and early 20th century that helped lead to the Fed's creation in 1913. Classes composed of students who wrote essays on what they hope to learn from the lectures. Worries of slower growth in China, coupled with earnings warnings from giant heavy equipment maker Caterpillar, among others, worried Wall Street today. The Dow was down 68 points to close at 13,170. The Nasdaq fell 4 points today. You're listening to NPR. The top U.S. military commander heard from House lawmakers today, who questioned him in light of recent developments, the U.S. should consider speeding up the timetable for bringing forces home from Afghanistan. Marine General John Allen assuring members of the House Armed Services Committee there is no part of the strategy that involves a permanent presence there. Current plan calls for a complete withdrawal of U.S. forces by 2014. Recent incident in which a U.S. sergeant is accused of killing 16 Afghan civilians has heightened tensions in Afghanistan. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is telling Congress Japan and Europe are reducing their dependence on Iranian oil and should be exempt from U.S. sanctions. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports 11 countries were singled out as examples for others to follow.
Secretary Clinton praises the 11 countries, especially Japan, for reducing their imports of Iranian oil. The diplomat she tapped as the Assistant Secretary for Energy, Carlos Pascual, says Japan cut imports by more than 15%, even as it grappled with the disaster at the Fukushima nuclear plant.
If Japan was able to do what it did, drastically reducing its imports of Iranian crude oil, that should be an example to others that they could potentially do more.
In his confirmation hearing, Pascual says the U.S. is hoping including the 12 other nations that import Iranian crude, will also look for alternatives. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Washington.
Peyton Manning has joined the Denver Broncos. He was along with John Elway making the announcement today, saying Elway said he personally notified the current quarterback, Tim Tebow, of the decision and said he has nothing negative to say about the man who led the Broncos to the playoffs this year.
Tim Tebow is a great kid, and I said that. I mean, he's the one guy, if I wanted someone to marry my daughter, it'd be him.
Tebow's future remains unclear at the moment. I'm Jack Spear, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at WTGrantFoundation.org.
Mitt Romney has won the Illinois Republican presidential primary, besting rival Rick Santorum in the big state contest. Exit polls results show Mr. Romney was preferred by Illinois primary goers who said the economy was the top issue in the campaign. The former Massachusetts governor also was overwhelmingly favored by those who said an ability to defeat President Barack Obama was the quality they most wanted in a GOP nominee. This is Decision 2012, special coverage of the 2012 Illinois primary from Illinois Public Media. I'm Craig Cohen. In just a few minutes, we'll talk with Tom Kasich. He's editorial page editor of the Champaign-Urbana News-Gazette. We'll discuss the Champaign County Board, Auditor, and Circuit Clerk races. Also ahead this hour, we'll learn more about a subject of a referendum on today's ballot, electric aggregation. And we'll talk with our panel about the newly redrawn 13th Congressional District. With us throughout the evening are Dr. Robert Rich, director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois, and political science professors Kent Redfield from the University of Illinois at Springfield, and John Jackson from the Paul Simon Policy Institute at SIU Carbondale. Welcome again, gentlemen. At the end of the previous hour, we were talking about the GOP presidential race. Of course, we now know that Mitt Romney has won the Illinois Republican presidential primary. What do you think was a key to Romney's victory tonight?
I think the keys were the things that we've mentioned already. I think a key is his emphasis on the economy and jobs, as the exit polls said. I think the missteps of Senator Santorum have been a big key here. I'll be interested to see ultimately which segments of the Illinois electorate he did well with. I suspect he did very well with women, more so than Santorum. It'll be interesting to see how well he did with those who label themselves as conservatives, those who label themselves as evangelicals as well. Earlier results I saw before going on the air tonight said that of the people who voted, 20% were urban, 70% suburban, 10% rural. And if you look at that number alone, you would have predicted that Governor Romney was going to do very well, because Senator Santorum traditionally has done well in the more rural, smaller towns.
Ken Redfield?
And one of the things that's reflective of a larger issue within Illinois politics, downstate is losing population. It is becoming more Republican, and therefore its participation, you know, the percentage it contributes to Republican primary has not slipped as much as its overall slippage in population. But there was a time in which, 45% or more came from the suburbs and 45% or more came from downstate in a typical Republican primary. It will be very interesting to see what those numbers look like in terms of the regional impact, because statewide, downstate is losing population. Chicago has lost population. Suburban Cook has remained fairly stable, and then the explosion in the suburbs of population. But part of that explosion has been in Hispanic and, a lesser extent, Asian voters. So the suburbs have gained more people, but it is they are also more diverse. And so this may, I suspect there's a regional aspect to this, as well as that where Santorum did the voters he appealed to tend to be the group within the Republican Party that's shrinking in size downstate.
John Jackson, voter turnout today was expected to be low, and it seems that that has bore out despite the nice weather. Who does a low turnout in Illinois benefit? Was that a benefit to Romney tonight?
I think so. I think the candidate with the best ground game, probably the most money, because money can buy organization and can buy ground game as well as air. I think all of that works in Santorum's direction. Just a quick comment to add to what Kent just said. I thought it notable that the public face of the Santorum campaign in this state was Al Salvi, and the public face of the Romney campaign was mostly Dan Rutherford, and I think that's a key right there, the makeup of the Republican electorate. The history and culture of the Republican Party is much more moderate in the state, and while there's a really hard right wing of the party, it tends not to win statewide and not to do very well, with the exception of 2010 in some races.
Tell you what, we're going to leave it there for now. John Jackson, Kent Renfield, Bob Rich, we'll check back with you in just a little while. In addition to the referenda and various federal and state legislative and judicial races we're monitoring tonight, we're also tracking the results of races for the Champaign County Board, Auditor, and Circuit Clerk. To tell us more about those, we're joined by Tom Kasich, editorial page editor of the Champaign-Urbana News-Gazette. Tom, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Let's start with the Champaign County Board, which is undergoing some structural changes. What's happening and why?
They're reducing the size of the board from 27 members to 22, and they are going from 9 districts to 11. So there'll be 22 members effective December 1st. This was dictated by a referendum, countywide referendum, that the voters decided they'd prefer a smaller county board. We have one of the larger county boards in the area with 27 members.
I imagine this would change the dynamics of the board a little bit.
It could, but right now it looks like, I think if the election were held today, the Democrats would maintain control of the county board. It would be close again, just as it is now. It's now 15 to 12, but the Dems would again have probably 6 out of the 11 districts. So it might not change too much, although there are a lot of retirements on the board and a lot of people are leaving.
Why, when they dialed back the number of members of the board, did they dial it back to an even number? Doesn't that just cry out for an eventual 11-11 tie and then gridlock?
Yes, that was brought up, but people, you know, for some reason decided that 11 was a good number, and that's what they chose. So we'll see. You know, it could be changed again. They could go even smaller, I suppose, but this is what it's going to be probably for 10 years.
What are the major issues facing the county board right now?
I think there's general agreement that the two big issues are what to do with the county nursing home, which has run into cash flow problems because the state and federal governments are late with their repayments. They've had to borrow money, and they may have to borrow even more. And then there's some talk about with the even further cuts in Medicaid that the county nursing home may really be in trouble. And then the second issue, which has a little more time to stew, has to do with what to do with the downtown county jail, which is, according to the sheriff, in deplorable condition and probably should be closed. And he'd like to consolidate it with the satellite jail in East Urbana.
How might new candidates bring new points of view to those particular discussions?
I'm not sure they will, because based on some of the discussions we've had and the debates I've covered, they're in pretty much agreement with the existing county board members. They're either split on they're split on both issues. There are people that say that the nursing home should be maintained, others who say that they'd prefer that it be privatized or closed entirely.
And what about the prison?
And the jail issue, many of the Democrats would like the jail the downtown jail to stay open and to be remodeled. But there's a lot of concern about the cost of that. And others, again, say that it makes more sense to consolidate all the operations in one building.
There are just a few contested races in the county board primary. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
There's actually one for the Republicans, and that's in a rural district. And two sort of incumbents. One longtime board member, Steve O'Connor, is running for re-election. He's being challenged by Stan Harper, who's a newcomer, and also by Aaron Esri, who was appointed to the board last year. The Farm Bureau is backing Esri and Harper, but Steve O'Connor has been there a long time, and I suspect that he'll do well. In the Democratic races, you've got one district on the south side of Champaign, another district that covers North Champaign and Urbana, where there are three people running for two different positions.
Can we anticipate a lively contest once we get past primary election night tonight and on to the general election?
You mean for the county board?
Yeah.
It's never too lively, and especially in a presidential election year. You're going to have some pretty good legislative races, I think. In comparison, it'll be pretty calm, but it'll be interesting. It's whether the Republican Party really wants to devote a lot of money and effort to retaking control of the county board. And sad to say that I think right now that they aren't, and so it may just be what it is now.
Let's move on to the Champaign County Auditor's race. In 2009, your paper investigated current auditor Tony Fabri. What did you find? Tell us, give a little bit of background about that.
We've actually had two kind of, it's evolved. And initially, we did a study of phone records and found that Mr. Fabri really wasn't in office very much. And then we later filed a FOIA for his email correspondence and found, he wasn't in the office very much. And you can go there and find 90% of the time we'd go to the office and Tony wasn't there, and they'd say, well, he's either been here or we don't know if he's coming in. Anyway, so the bottom line is that Mr. Fabri wasn't in the office very often, and both Democrats and Republicans admitted that. So there was a lot of interest in running by both Republicans and Democrats, and Tony eventually decided not to run for a second term.
And part of what may have been part of that decision-making was the fact that this whole investigation led to a referendum to eliminate the office, which was voted down.
Correct.
So he's still in office, but he won't be seeking another term.
Yeah, a couple county board members suggested that they could hire a professional auditor instead of having an elected auditor, and then that way the county board would have control over the office. But the public decided that wasn't a good idea. They'd prefer to decide who would be the auditor, and so we're back to having an election, and we have three candidates in the Democratic Party, and only a single Republican candidate at this point.
Tell us about those candidates.
The Republican candidate is John Farney, who's a deputy county clerk and has run for offices before. He lives in Urbana. The three Democratic candidates are Kevin Sandifer, George Danos, and Ben Carlson. Danos and Carlson live in Champaign. Kevin Sandifer lives in Royal. He's been a Democratic Party official for several years. Danos, he was a teaching assistant at Parkland College and now is doing substitute teaching in the Urbana School District. Ben Carlson is an insurance agent in Champaign.
How much of that Democratic race, that three-way race, has to do with those candidates, or how much of it has to do with how they see themselves as performing this particular office as compared to Fabri?
They've all sort of said, I'm going to work harder than the current office holder, and I'm going to be there, and I'm going to work hard for the people of Champaign County. That's without mentioning Mr. Fabri. The campaign has basically been, who do you know and who's working the hardest? And I think it's going to come down to either Mr. Danos or Mr. Sandifer.
And how have all three of them positioned themselves in comparison to each other?
Mr. Danos has suggested that he's the most qualified because he has accounting experience. Mr. Sandifer says that he has not quite accounting. He's got business experience in that he works for a nonprofit and has to do financial statements. And so he's also working toward a degree in accounting. But again, Danos is the one who says he's done it. He's got the best qualifications, and he could step right in.
And this is a bigger picture question, but for any election in recent years, it seems like we're maybe, as an electorate, changing our thoughts about what it means to have practical experience as a candidate for a particular office. I mean, even for the presidency, there have been times when we've looked at candidates and we've said, we've wound up either electing or seriously considering candidates that maybe have far less experience in Washington, D.C., than candidates in previous election years. And some people see that as a positive, not a negative.
It's amazing the number of calls I get at work from people who want to know who's the incumbent running in a particular race because they don't want to vote for the incumbents. And this is at all levels. And we hear this about Congress, of course, all the time. But I hear it, even down to the county board and the legislature, where it doesn't matter what kind of experience you have. They are, people are angry about incumbents. They're angry about government, and they want to change.
So anti-incumbency could rule the day.
That will be interesting to watch. You're not going, obviously not going to see it in some of these county races because these are all newcomers. But it'll be interesting. There's a couple legislative races around our area where incumbents are running, and it'll be interesting to see if there's a big backlash against them.
Before we leave the auditor's race behind, what major issues should inform this race now through the fall?
You know, it's hard for anybody to judge who's qualified to be an auditor. Or I think the thing that people would want to watch for is who's going to be independent of both the county board and county officials. Who's going to be willing to say, who's going to be willing to call people when there's some sort of financial irregularity or a problem? The interesting thing is that this reared its head 50 years ago this month. The auditor of Champaign County found that the state's attorney at the time had shorted an account by about $41,000 and called him on it. And the state's attorney not only had to resign, but he was indicted and sent to prison. So an independent auditor is important.
Finally, let's talk about the race for circuit clerk. There are three Democratic candidates running for circuit clerk, facing unopposed Republican Stephanie Holderfield. Tell us about the three Democrats first.
The three Democrats are Barbara Wysocki, who's the former chair of the county board and a longtime 12-year county board member. Lori Hansen, who runs the law library in the county courthouse. And Evelyn Underwood, who is a former Urbana school board member and has a lot of degrees, a very impressive list of academic degrees.
And Stephanie Holderfield, if I understand correctly, was not at one time unopposed.
Correct.
Another candidate dropped out.
Correct. She was the first one to declare among the Republicans. And then last fall, former state representative and state senator Rick Winkle decided to get into the race. And then just as abruptly dropped out of the race when he got a promotion at a University of Illinois position. So now Stephanie Holderfield is alone as the Republican nominee.
So how are these candidates separating themselves out from each other?
It's about who they know and how they're campaigning and where they're campaigning. And, you know, they can all promise that they'll make the office better, that they'll make it more efficient and more friendly, but nobody can really prove that. So they're all, you know, saying, well, you know, look at my experience as a county board chair or as a community activist in the case of Mrs. Underwood, or my work with the county, the judges and the state's attorney's office and other people in the courthouse in the case of Lori Hansen.
Now, they're all vying to replace Linda Frank, who has been the circuit clerk for nearly 20 years.
Right.
Will the ultimate nominees, Holderfield, it would seem, on the Republican side, and whoever wins the Democratic nomination, have some big shoes to fill here?
Not really. I think there's a lot of thought that the circuit clerk's office does need improvement, especially in terms of technology and innovation. I think everybody's kind of looking forward to a change in the circuit clerk's office. If you talk to any of the lawyers over there who daily work with the office, or any of the judges or state's attorneys, assistant state's attorneys, there's pretty good unanimity that there's time for a change in that office.
What do our listeners need to know most about all three of these offices? What should be the takeaway, regardless of who ends up with the nomination in tonight's primaries?
You know, for the auditor, again, I think you want somebody who's independent, who's going to work, who's going to be there, who's going to call out other people when there are financial irregularities or questions. For the circuit clerk, you want somebody who's going to go in there and fix the problems that most people agree there are and make it a little more friendly office. And for the county board, you just want somebody who's going to know the issues and study up before coming to a county board meeting and reading through the minutes and the agenda items at the meeting. I mean, there are problems with that board. There are problems with all these offices. In fact, there are problems everywhere, aren't there?
What ultimately, though, intrigues you most about these primary elections and the upcoming general election season?
You know, it's all about turnout. I cannot emphasize that point. That's the way it is in every election, but it's especially true in primaries. And we have our own particular issue here in Champaign County this time because it's spring break and so many people are going to be out of town, not just at the university, but in most of the public schools in the county. So, you know, it's a question of who turns out and also who has already voted in early voting and absentee voting.
Do you think that was taken into account when the date for the primary was set?
You mean statewide?
Statewide,
They don't pay attention to who's doing, you know, what the spring break is at the University
of Illinois. Let's face it. If you're going to do a primary in mid to late March, you can pretty well count on that's around the time a lot of schools throughout the state are in spring break, and a lot of families use spring break as an opportunity to go out of town. I wonder how much consideration was given to the calendar.
It's a matter of tradition. And for the last 20 years or so, we've had a March primary, except for 2008 when we had a February primary. If anybody remembers that, the weather actually wasn't too bad in that day. But we had an early primary in order to give Barack Obama, who was then the Democratic front runner from Illinois, to give him a break, to give him some momentum. Obviously was going to win Illinois, and they wanted to give him a place to get a lot of votes early on.
Well, the primary calendar as a concept has been really contentious, especially the last decade or so, as different states have been jockeying to be closer to the beginning of the primary calendar to try and have a greater impact on whichever party is trying to resolve a nomination fight. Do you think Illinois might be looking to jockey to a different position in the coming years?
I don't think so. I think we would have, the Democrats who run state government, the legislature especially, if they were interested in that, they could have done it any time. The interesting thing to me is, why don't we have a May or June primary? We had a June primary in the 50s and 60s, but I'm not sure why that changed. But a lot of people say that would make more sense because it would shorten the election season. And the weather would be better to vote.
Tom Kasich, thanks so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure.
That's Tom Kasich, editorial page editor of the Champaign-Urbana News-Gazette. I'm back with Bob Rich, director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. So I was talking with Tom about this primary date. In some ways, could it be characterized as a bit of a mistake to have a primary on March 20th in the midst of primaries on either side at a time when people might be traveling and almost guaranteeing a lower voter turnout?
I think that what Tom said about the traveling and vacation issue is correct. I actually think that going back to a March primary in Illinois was a good idea in the sense that it put us in the middle of the primary season. I think having a chance to have more influence on a competitive close election, as I think we're going to have on this one.
Mitt Romney has won the Illinois Republican presidential primary, besting rival Rick Santorum in the big state contest. In fact, with 45% of precincts reporting, Mitt Romney garnered nearly 53% of the vote to Rick Santorum's 31%. Ron Paul with about 9%. Newt Gingrich about 7.25%. So that's how things have broken down thus far. With 45% reporting, that's enough to indicate that Mitt Romney has in fact won the Illinois Republican presidential primary, and he's been talking about that during the last few minutes. Among the comments that Romney shared with some of his supporters, he of course said, "What a night. Thank you, Illinois. What a night. Tonight we thank the people of Illinois for their vote and this extraordinary victory." He also said of President Obama and the last 3 years, he said, "Too many apologies and not enough jobs." He went on to say, "Enough. We've had enough." Here's another item to pass along. Representative Derek Smith, Democrat from Chicago, has won the Democratic nomination for the Illinois House in the 10th District. Smith was charged with bribery last week after federal authorities claimed he accepted $7,000 in exchange for supporting what he thought was a daycare center state grant application. We'll have more details as they come in. You're listening to Decision 2012, live election coverage from Illinois Public Media, WILL, and online at WILL.illinois.edu.
good evening. This is primary election coverage from Illinois Public Radio. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Professor Kent Redfield from the University of Illinois, Springfield. A quick update on the presidential race in Illinois tonight. Mitt Romney has been declared the winner. 51% of the vote is what Romney currently has, and that's with about 40% of precincts reporting. Romney ahead of Rick Santorum, 51% to 31%. Ron Paul coming in third right now with 9%, and Newt Gingrich with 7% of the vote. Now, there are also some categories of elections tonight that we are following, including congressional campaigns that are taking place and getting quite a bit of attention. Jesse Jackson Jr. appears well on his way to winning his contested primary over Debbie Halverson in the 2nd Congressional District. 60% of the vote in there. Jackson with 73% of the vote to Debbie Halverson's 27%. Also in another district, District 8, Tammy Duckworth with a big lead over Raja Krishnamoorthi. That's with 33% of the vote in. Duckworth has a 64 to 36% lead in that race. In an open seat in the Metro East area, the 12th district, on the Democratic side, Brad Harriman, a big lead right now with 64% of the vote. That's with about a quarter of all precincts reporting in. Jason Plummer, also a pretty big lead among the Republicans. So Harriman, the Democrat, and Plummer, the Republican, could be headed off for a square off this November. Just some of the numbers we're seeing so far. Another one that we are watching, Adam Kinzinger, the Republican congressman, facing off against another incumbent, Don Manzullo. And that's with 14% of the vote in that race, the 16th Congressional House District. Again, 14% of the vote in Kinzinger, leading Manzullo at this time, 61 to 39%. Kent Redfield, let me bring you in. Any surprises that you heard in those numbers?
Not particularly. I mean, we knew Manzullo and Kinzinger was going to be close. I think the Duckworth lead is more than what people thought, although she certainly, or the polling has been pushing her way. Jesse Jackson, you know, had a spirited challenge, but that district still had about 70-80% of his old district. And so, you know, we have a combination of districts where the Republican, you know, the two Republicans facing off, Manzullo and Kinzinger, whoever wins will win in the fall, whereas, you know, down in the 12th, we're setting up a pretty competitive district that the Democrats didn't think they'd have to spend money on because they assumed Costello was running for reelection. And so that may siphon off some Democratic resources from other parts of the state where they were hoping to pick up some seats with the new map that they drew.
And speaking of redistricting, of course, that's what led Kinzinger and Manzullo to wind up having to face each other, basically, by the way the new districts were drawn by Democrats. That has been not only a hotly contested race, but it's also been one that has gotten very personal, very nasty as that's gone on. Does that hurt the party going forward? When you have a primary that is, you know, what involves the House Majority Leader getting involved with supporting one candidate over the other?
It's going to make for maybe uncomfortableness in terms of the rest of the session of Congress, depending on who wins. It certainly is a safe seat for the Republicans. So it's not like having a bitter presidential primary or bitter primary for governor where, you know, then you've got a general election with a strong opponent. The Democrats will not contest the 16th. It's a very solid Republican district. The Democrats packed Republicans into that and some other districts so that they could create some opportunities elsewhere. So, yeah, it's very personal and nasty, and you've got a longtime incumbent who may be going down, and those are all of his very bitter and very difficult.
And again, Adam Kinzinger leading Don Manzullo 61% to 39%, and that's with about 14% of the precincts reporting in there. Again, if you missed it earlier, Mitt Romney declared the winner rather early tonight of the Illinois presidential primary on the Republican side. Romney with 51% of the votes, Rick Santorum coming in with 31%, and then Ron Paul 9% and Newt Gingrich 7% of the vote. You're listening to live coverage of the Illinois presidential primary here on Illinois Public Radio.
And this is Decision 2012 live election coverage from Illinois Public Media, WILL. Check out the latest results right now at will.illinois.edu/election. You can also follow us on Twitter at Will Public Radio or Facebook, WILL Radio TV Online. You want, let me give you that Twitter handle. I gave it to you wrong. It's Will Public Media. Will Public Media. Today, nearly 300 Illinois communities voted on the issue of municipal electric aggregation. That's the ability for cities to bundle together the accounts of residential and small business customers for a less expensive source of power. Champaign and Urbana are among those communities, and if approved by voters today, local officials will be among those negotiating for a lower rate on the supply portion of their utility bills. Illinois Public Media's Jeff Bossert now reports on what comes next.
Both cities have been actively marketing the plan, as signs can be seen on many street corners. As Urbana Alderman Charlie Smythe terms it, it's another way of participating in deregulation. If the referendum passes, residents don't have to be part of the plan. They can opt out of it. Smythe says the option of giving residents an opt-in moved too slowly, losing an opportunity for better savings.
Here's an opportunity to save millions of dollars for both communities. The only way we do it is to have the power of lots of people. The opt-in program moves very slowly, wouldn't allow us to lock in some really low electric rates that are available right now. The opt-out program lets us act a lot more quickly on the basis of a large group of people all at once.
It's also possible that residents have already signed up with one of the alternate suppliers that have been sending out mass mailings. Jim Chilson with the watchdog group, the Citizens Utility Board, says in either case, it's about something making up just a portion of their utility bill.
If you participate, if you just individually go with an electricity, an alternative supplier, or you participate through municipal aggregation, that does not mean that you're going to be escaping Ameren rate hikes, because Ameren will still deliver the electricity to your home regardless of who is actually supplying the electricity. And when it gets rate hikes before the Illinois Commerce Commission, those are the rates that go up, those delivery rates.
The acting chair of the Champaign County Republican Party, Habib Habib, says with all the companies in the private sector offering lower rates already, the campaigns in Champaign and Urbana are unnecessary. And if the referendum does pass, he says it's too easy for residents who don't want to be part of aggregation to be forced into it by failing to respond to a single letter.
The odds are that people may miss that mailing and they end up being in the program by default, even if they didn't intend to be in the program. We feel that it should have been, if it's going to happen, that it should have been opt-in rather than opt-out.
Habib, who's also on the board of the Champaign County Chamber of Commerce, says the cities are getting involved in something that should be left to the private vendors.
They're going to have to add staff to handle it, because you need local staff to be able to organize it. Government is big enough already. If they need to be trimmed and just concentrate on the services that we really want them to have, for example, police and roads and things like that.
About 20 Illinois communities have already gone through with municipal electric aggregation, and the Citizens Utility Board says customers have saved up to $14 a month. Whatever happens on ballots in Champaign, Urbana, and all other Illinois cities with this referendum, Ameren and Commonwealth Edison are expected to charge lower prices on their own after higher price contracts they signed expire next year. I'm Jeff Bossert, Illinois Public Media.
One of the races we're, of course, following intently is for both the Democratic and Republican candidates who will face one another in November to represent the newly redrawn 13th Congressional District. The district stretches from here in Champaign-Urbana all the way to far western Illinois to the metro east area of St. Louis. Let's hear now a little bit more about the district and the candidates that you may have voted for today, starting with Republican Congressman Tim Johnson of Urbana, who's doing something tonight that he hasn't had to do in more than a decade, squaring off in a Republican primary. As Illinois Public Media's Sean Powers reports, two other Republicans are eyeing the newly redrawn 13th district seat.
The last time Johnson had any challengers in the primary was back in 2000, the year he was first elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. He was up against State Representative Bill Brady, who later went on to the Illinois Senate and won the GOP nomination for governor in 2010, Sam Ewing, son of former Congressman Tom Ewing, and Jeffrey Jones, a dentist in the Bloomington Normal area. Johnson walked away with 44% of the vote. Here he is in March of 2000, shortly after his primary win.
It's like the semifinals of the Final Four. You know, you before you get to the championship game, you got to win the semifinal, and you work on your perimeter game. And so, obviously, it's a tremendous significance, and it makes you a better candidate. And these three individuals made me a better candidate, and I thank them for that.
Now there's a different group of players in the upcoming primary match who have never held political office and who live in the Metro East area. That's because the new 13th Congressional District, covering much of the old 15th District, now stretches to the southern part of the state. Veterinarian Michael Fershing of Morrow is one of Johnson's two Republican challengers. He ran against Republican Congressman John Shimkus of Collinsville in 2010 and lost in the primary by a wide margin, securing only 15% of the vote. Now he's running against a different incumbent, but Fershing says his reasons for wanting to go to Washington haven't changed.
I really was expecting in the last 2 years we would have seen the huge collapse of the economic situation worldwide, and but it's been held off a little bit longer. I just have a hard time believing we can go another 2 years without the bubble that isn't going to pop and cause a lot of havoc to everybody's life.
Fershing says he favors a flat income tax, disbanding the Federal Reserve, and limiting military engagements to those authorized by a formal declaration of war by Congress. He also says he would cut spending on programs that the government can't afford to run and move all agricultural programs to the states.
If you have disseminated powers, then you have more local control of it, plus you have more states doing the various programs. But if you just have government running everything, then when they screw up and do the wrong thing, then it's a lot harder to control.
Fershing says he thinks the 13th Congressional District's rural constituency will relate more to his ideas and support him in the primary. But he isn't the only GOP newcomer in the race. Meet 70-year-old Frank Metzger, a retired iron worker from Glen Carbon who now runs his own tree-cutting business.
Retirement's not in the Bible. I'll just work until I drop dead someday.
Metzger hasn't run for political office before, and he admits that he doesn't have much name recognition in the state. But he says politics is in his blood. His father was a New Jersey legislator who also ran for governor. Metzger says he thinks there needs to be more elected officials who represent a broader base.
The lack of respect for the American people, the working man, distresses me way beyond distress. It disgusts me. The average person does not feel they are represented in the House of Representatives.
As a registered Republican and Tea Party member, Metzger says he believes in smaller government. On economic issues, he's against new tax hikes but would like to cut spending for Planned Parenthood and foreign aid. He also supports the Keystone XL pipeline, which President Obama has tried to delay.
I would like to see our own energy resources developed to the max. Right now, everything's on hold. There are 10,000 jobs that will open, and union jobs, too, as soon as Obama okays the pipeline.
Tim Johnson spokesman Phil Bloomer says the presence of these two candidates from an area where the congressman isn't well known poses a challenge in the race. But he says it's different from the challenge Johnson faced in his last contested primary in 2000. Back then, there were more prominent names on the ballot, and no one had the advantage of being an incumbent.
This is a little different sort of situation because I frankly don't know these guys, and they don't have any public policy experience. They're just individuals who are angry and frustrated with the status quo.
Bloomer says Johnson is already campaigning in the Metro East area and has no plans to change his strategy. I'm Sean Powers, Illinois Public Media.
And now on to the Democratic candidates running in the 13th Congressional District. As Illinois Public Radio's Willis Kern reports, pundits say whoever wins the primary tonight has a solid chance of winning in November.
The new 13th Congressional District is among those crafted by Illinois Democrats, so the six-term GOP incumbent Tim Johnson would be vulnerable. It contains Champaign-Urbana, Bloomington-Normal, Decatur, and Springfield, and trades away Republican strongholds in the northern part of the old 15th District in exchange for Democratically-leaning Madison County and Metro East. One of the candidates is Matt Getten.
I've been a prosecutor for the last 8 years, last seven as the Greene County State's Attorney. I'm a veteran of Afghanistan. I've been in the Illinois Army National Guard for 13 years, and more recently I've transferred to the Air National Guard. I've been a small business owner. I have been an educator. I was a high school teacher for a short time.
Getten's opponent is David Gill, the Bloomington emergency room physician who's taking his fourth crack at unseating Johnson. Gill says he has a solid shot this time because the district looks so different.
If the map hadn't changed, if it was still Illinois 15, I don't know that I was going to keep beating my head against the wall. God bless Ford County and Douglas County and Iroquois County, but there's places there where God with a D after his name couldn't beat Satan with an R after his name.
Those areas aren't a factor anymore, but included in the new 13th are predominantly rural areas in other traditionally leaning Republican counties, Greene, Jersey, and Macoupin. Gill says he's confident he can perform well there.
I've lived in rural areas in the past, and a lot of that is farming country, rural country. There's a way of life there that I think is very similar to what they have in Carrollton and Jerseyville and Carlinville. And, you know, I feel very comfortable in those environments as I've been traveling these last 7 months.
Despite that presence, Gill's name is recognized primarily in parts of the old 15th District, Champaign, Bloomington, and Clinton. Gatton's the son of Greene County's former state's attorney, and his brother holds the same office in a neighboring county. The Gatton family is well-connected in the Democratic Party, and that connection helped lead to an unprecedented endorsement from Illinois senior U.S. Senator Dick Durbin.
The part of the district that he's from traditionally would lean Republican, but he's going to do well there. And I thought that may give him a slight advantage when it comes in to the overall congressional district.
We're disappointed to see Senator Durbin endorsing Matt Gatton.
Mike Richards is a Gill campaign spokesman.
Candidate who's been standing up for women's rights. He's been endorsed by the National Now, and he's the only candidate who's 100% pro-choice.
It's clear that Gill is highlighting Gettin's Catholic faith as a wedge between the two candidates, who, even as Gettin acknowledges, take very similar stances on many major issues. Name recognition and political experience might be the key factor in this race, according to Illinois State University political scientist Eric Rankin, himself a Democrat and a member of the McLean County Board. Rankin notes the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee is backing Gettin, and he says it's likely because Gill has already taken his three strikes at getting to Washington.
The DCCC and other than the National Party has just really got to the point where they're looking at this race and going, we're going to put our eggs in the basket of the unknown rather than what we already know and what we assume to be the eventual loser.
Nevertheless, Gill says he's buoyed by strong grassroots support. He says Macon County Republicans took the unusual step of voting on endorsement right after a joint appearance by each candidate, and he says the result was 50 Gill votes and none for Gettin. On defense issues, both say the military budget should be open for cuts, though Gettin says he agrees with Defense Secretary Leon Panetta that current proposed cuts aren't sustainable.
We can shrink the military, but I don't know that we can do that without sacrificing our ability to do what we've been trying to do for the past 10 years, which is wage wars and two theaters of operation.
Both Gill and Gettin fervently attack GOP incumbent Tim Johnson. Gettin says voters clearly want a change, and Gill says Johnson lacks principle and cites Johnson's reversal on term limits and his change of heart away from supporting the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Johnson faces what appears to be token opposition in the primary, but could very well have the political fight of his life on his hands in November. I'm Willis Kern.
And now let's discuss this 13th Congressional District and the candidates in more depth. Once again, joining us, Dr. Robert Rich, Director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. Hello again, Bob. And on the line tonight, political science professors Kent Redfield from the University of Illinois at Springfield and John Jackson from SIU Carbondale. Gentlemen, thank you all for joining us once again. This district, because of how far it stretches geographically, maybe one of the most intriguing districts in the state. How can whoever wins tonight best serve such a wide swath of Illinois, Bob?
I think that we have to keep in mind that this district is the poster child for the redistricting process. This is clearly a case where the Democrats who were controlling the map wanted to give Representative Tim Johnson a strong fight for his life, so to speak, a strong competition. And the way to do that was to redistrict the old 15th district so that Johnson didn't have a natural constituency in favor. And to answer your question directly, I think that anybody who wins this race is going to have a real challenge in terms of serving such a large district. But I do think that Tim Johnson is going to have real competition, and it's going to be a very close election.
Kent, is that how you read it?
I think it is going to be competitive. This is one of those situations where it's going to depend on what's going on in other areas. You know, the fact that Costello did not run in the 12th means that the Democrats are going to have to spend resources there. They recrafted the 17th, which is Quad Cities, now is part of Peoria, goes up to Rockford, so they could go after Representative Schilling, who took away the old Lane Evans Hair seat. So even downstate, this is probably the Democrats' third priority, and we're talking national money now. And then the Democrats crafted three districts in the suburbs that they think they can get, the 8th, which is Duckworth, and probably against Walsh, the 11th, which is a rematch, which is Congressman Bickert against former Congressman Foster, and then the Dolt up in the 10th. And so how much attention this district gets, I think it, you know, it could go for a Democrat, but it may be, you know, there's going to be some decisions made by the national Democrats about where's the best place to put our money. And so if it's in a strong Democratic year with a lot of resources and a candidate that takes off, this could go Democratic. But I would not, certainly wouldn't want to write Congressman Johnson's political obituary this year because of the way the rest of the state is shaping up. And we'll have to see whether either of those candidates on the Democratic side can really catch fire.
John Jackson, is a district stretching this far from here in Champaign-Urbana all the way to St. Louis, historically, have we seen district drawings like this before?
Well, yes. In some ways, this is an anomaly in that it is so far across the state. But if you really look at the next district, which is the 15th, it's even larger in terms of geography. The 15th is bigger than some states. Some part of that, a reasonable part of it, is the old Glenn Fichard district, and I've heard him talk about the challenges of trying to drive physically from one end of the district to another, but yeah, that's a routine kind of problem, particularly in the western and more rural states. It's just something that congressmen in sparsely populated areas have to put up with.
Bob, what issues should be most prevalent in the run-up to the general election for the eventual 13th district candidates?
I think that the issues will be very similar to the national issues. I think that the jobs and the economy will be an issue. I think that that foreign policy concerns may be an issue as well. I think that individual rights will be some of the so-called social issues may be a concern as well. But I certainly wouldn't want to be understood from my previous comments to write Senate Representative Johnson's obituary. Tim Johnson is one of the most gifted politicians in terms of constituency relationships and building constituency relationships, and he's very, very hardworking as well.
The other thing I would add is higher education is certainly an issue within this district. Because of Bloomington, Normal, Champaign, Springfield, it goes down into Madison County and picks up Edwardsville, which is part of the, as SIU Edwardsville. And so, there's a university aspect to this district that makes it different than any of the other downstate districts.
As we take a look at these candidates, we heard sort of a little bit of a summary of the Republican and the Democratic candidates. Are there particular issues that the candidates in each party have used to differentiate themselves?
Well, I think the social issues are one that people use to differentiate themselves. I think that the issue of taxation and how the tax burden should be distributed is a issue, I think the answer to the deficit reduction is an issue as well.
And the Democratic candidate has to decide where are they going to position themselves in terms of health care, because the president's health care plan is not popular downstate, nor is the president. If you looked at the, his popularity overall in Illinois is fine, particularly compared to other places, but is very regional. And downstate, his numbers are not good at all. And you really have to run as a conservative Democrat, even in, you know, I don't know if even's the right word, but, you know, there are lightning rod issues like guns that, you know, you could end up a Democratic candidate getting into some becoming a lightning rod on those kinds of things. So I think those are other factors.
You mentioned health care. I want to point out, for example, the distinction between David Gill and Matt Gettin. They have different ideas about what they would like to see with the nation's health care system. And they took part in a televised debate this month on WILL. Gill, who's an emergency room doctor, believes the country needs a single-payer health care program.
We can't afford not to have a single-payer program. The way that it stands today, we throw away 40% of our giant healthcare budget into a black hole known as the private health insurance industry, and we need to take that money back.
But Matt Gettin says he doesn't think that Gill's push for a single-payer system is a good idea right now, saying it's too costly.
Congress is broken, and they're talking about ending Medicare as we know it. They're talking about veterans who are not going to get their services that they need because we can't figure out how to pay for it at a time when all of that is going on. I don't know how we can afford what you're proposing.
Gettin calls the health care law imperfect. He says he worries about its effect on businesses. Gill says he suspects the health care law could change because of a challenge to its legality that the U.S. Supreme Court will weigh in on this summer. Bob, we do see a little bit of a distinction there.
Yeah, and I think that we should also keep in mind, at least we should ask ourselves the question, why does Senator Durbin endorse Gettin? And I think this plays into the conversation we were having already. I think if Gettin wins the primary, there's more of a chance that the quote-unquote Democratic establishment will give some more attention to this district, believing they could win it. I think if Dr. Gill were to win this primary, I think the Democrats will say this is not a high priority for us and Representative Johnson's going to win anyway.
Before we wrap up for this hour, I wanted to ask Kent Redfield, should we anticipate a change in the balance of power among Illinois' congressional contingent come November, or is Illinois still, as always, sort of a firmly entrenched blue state?
Well, it is, you know, statewide, it's very Democratic. You know, we currently have a map that has 11 Republicans in our congressional district that's 11 Republicans and 8 Democrats. This is a brutal map if you're a Republican, the new congressional map. Because there used to be 6 suburban seats that were represented by 6 Republicans, and the Democrats have a map that has 5 suburban seats, and they think they can take 3 of them. I think that's optimistic, but you know, if the Democrats get everything that they think they could get, and that doesn't include the 13th. You could go from 11 Republicans and 8 Democrats to 12 Democrats and 6 Republicans. You know, they packed Republicans into a very, very safe districts, tried to create opportunities. And so you could have a huge swing. This Illinois gets a lot of attention nationally because this is an area where if the Democrats are going to pick up enough seats to take over Congress, which is certainly a long shot, then they pretty much have to run the table in Illinois.
Bob Rich, Kent Redfield, John Jackson will check in with you again in just a little while. I want to just quickly run down some of the results that we do have so far. As I've mentioned over the last hour, as we now know, Mitt Romney won the GOP presidential primary with 61% of the vote in at this point. He has secured 48% of the vote to Rick Santorum's 34%. Ron Paul has polled in about 9%. Newt Gingrich just under 8%. And of course, those numbers will tweak up and down a little bit as more precincts report in, but it's more than enough to indicate that Mitt Romney appears to have won the Illinois primary. No results yet in for the 13th Congressional District. We're going to keep an eye on that. In the 51st Senate race, Chapin Rose, with 44% of the vote in, is holding a sizable lead over Tom Plura, about 62% to 37%. In the 53rd Senate race, Jason Barrickman, and this is a Republican race between Jason Barrickman and Shane Cultra. Barrickman owns about 66% of the vote to Cultra's 34%. 4%. That's with about 26% of the votes in. And there are some other races we're keeping an eye on, but not that much has been reported in yet. So we don't want to report anything in particular about those with just 1 or 2 percentage points reporting. You're listening to live election coverage from Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3 Urbana.